FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is March 6th, 2017. And so we have a new sponsor. I'm sure you've heard of them. They are amazing. Casper is a sleep brand. They've created a perfect mattress. They sell directly to you, the consumer, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house as a sleek design and is delivered in a small, how-did-they-do-that-size box. In addition to the mattress, Casper also offers an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. I mean, the quality is just unparalleled. They are incredible. So their obsessively engineered mattress, it's at a shockingly fair price. It combines supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink, just the right bounce. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Look, you can try them for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Designed, developed, assembled in the good old U.S. of A. You just go over to www.casper.com/FSN and then use this promo code FSN. That's all you have to do. And you'll save $50, which is quite a good deal. It's that simple. Go to www.casper.com/FSN. It's really great. So comfortable. You're going to sleep like you've never slept before. You're going to love it. Promise you that. So check it out now. All right. So, well, aside from the little old lady who couldn't find her Bentley in Palm Beach because she forgot which one she left home with, there are some important things happening in the world. Trump being bugged, etc. John Rubino is with us now. Good morning, John.
Morning, Kerry. Well, you live in a very shishy neighborhood, don't you?
Yeah.
Ladies are getting their Bentleys.
That's not my neighborhood.
Right down the street from your house.
No, that's not my neighborhood, but it's about 20 minutes away.
Oh, okay. Close enough. You know, I was there a while ago, and it all seems very 1%-ish to me.
Oh, yeah. Very 1%-ish.
Yeah. I don't think there are any Bentleys in the entire state of Idaho out here, unless they have four-wheel drive for the snow in the winter.
And for good reason.
Yeah. Anyhow, yeah, lots going on. Stocks, since you and I spoke last, hit another record. Now they're rolling over, which is, it's about time, you know? Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things that's been happening in this blow-off top that we've seen since the election is that individuals are jumping back into the market with both feet now. ETF sales, equity ETFs, are absolutely through the roof, which is a sign that retail investors are piling into the market, which is in turn a sign of a top usually, because that's dumb money, sorry to say it. But when regular people who have been nervous about the stock market because they remember the last crash and they've stayed out of the market for year after year while it's been going up, finally decide that they can't wait any longer, they can't pass up the easy money, and they start piling in, that's usually what happens right before the market tanks. And so now we're seeing that in a really big way via ETFs. That's the new vehicle for individuals to get into the market very easily, because you can buy one like a stock. You don't have to call a broker. You don't have to, you know, go to jump through any hoops or anything. And you can buy them while they're trading during the day. So it's safe, convenient way to jump into equities. And that's what people are doing right now. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're seeing market soar back to record levels. It hit a record in 2015, but that did not presage a market crash. And it fell off a little bit between now and then. And now it's soaring again. It's at record levels, no matter how you slice it, which is also a sign of dumb money getting excited, because margin debt is basically people borrowing against their existing stock portfolios to buy more stock. Normally that is also a sign of a market top. So we'll see. Stocks are down today, and you can attribute that to political nervousness about all the elections coming up in Europe and elsewhere, or the stuff going on in Washington, or the fact that the Fed is raising interest rates. But I think if the market rolls over from here, it's just a sign that everybody who could buy has already bought, you know, and it's time for the bull market to be exhausted and then to roll over and start falling. And then we get the downside dynamics that mirror the upside dynamics, where people who have been buying the dip and buying the dip and buying the dip finally panic and decide that the market's going down forever, and then they bail. And so that's out there somewhere. It might not be this that's the beginning of it, but when it begins, it'll feel like this. And I, you know, based on any kind of valuation measure, it should have happened a while ago. We shouldn't have gotten to this point, but for a lot of crazy reasons, we did.
Hey, what about Snapchat?
Yeah,
that's like Snapchat. Another sign, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of those tech IPOs that has the feel of signpost of a market top, because Snapchat basically deals in pictures that evaporate after a few seconds, which means that they're not saving any kind of useful data. You know, on Facebook, people do stuff and that data survives and Facebook can monetize it. But Snapchat doesn't have that opportunity, because the stuff that's created on its site disappears. And so, you know, it's not the same kind of company as these other companies that are creating huge information databases that can be monetized and that stay valuable and grow more valuable with time. So Snapchat is kind of a different animal, and yet it's valued up there with these other companies that have more or less real stuff to sell going forward. So it's possible that that's also a sign of a market top. A lot of signs of market tops out there. And in this world, it's hard to call turning points, because much stuff that's happening is unprecedented. You know, you've got governments intervening in markets in ways they've never intervened in before. And that's distorting valuations out there. That we have negative interest rates around the world and near zero interest rates in the U.S. is completely unprecedented. There, Carrie, you've seen those charts of interest rates going back 3,500 years that show that interest rates have never been this low in history. And that's a result of governments, for the first time ever, for instance, buying up all the existing sovereign debt in their markets, and in that way pushing interest rates down to extraordinary levels. And in Switzerland and Japan, at least, the equity markets are being distorted by central banks who are buying up equities all over the place. Now, the US and the European Central Bank haven't started doing that yet, but they're under a lot of pressure to start, so that when the next correction comes, that's going to be one of the features of it, is the central banks in the US and in Europe are going to step in and start buying stocks. And who knows what that's going to do to valuations and to the normal course of a bear market. You know, normally you need 20, 30, 40% down to flush out all the bad ideas and all the really dumb money before the cycle can begin again and start rising. Mm-hmm. Well, if the central banks jump in to short circuit that process, then maybe the next correction is fairly mild and some new crazy bull market starts from there. It's hard to know. But one thing that we can say with certainty is that whereas individual investors are dumb money, governments are dumb money on steroids. So that's real for sure. Dumb money. Because, well, you know, when central banks buy stocks, they aren't sitting there analyzing each company to see which one is a better relative value. They're buying stuff across the board with unlimited money that they create out of thin air. That's something that individual investors can only dream about. You know, you can borrow against your stocks and buy, you know, 50% more stocks if you want to use margin debt. But you do have limitations on you can employ to follow your dumb ideas in the market. But governments don't have any kind of limitation like that. Mm-hmm. $1 trillion with a mouse click, and then use it to buy equities across the board. That's what we'll see next time around. And the question then becomes, do you just follow the Fed and buy the dip from here on out? Because you know these incredibly powerful entities with unlimited money have your back.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff has to create some kind of a distortion that leads to bad times in the short run. In other words, the central banks and their buying equities will just lead all the smart money to dump their equities into the and basically cause the smart money to exit the market, which would cause a drop. You know, you just can't know. You can't know how this is going to play out, but it's certainly unprecedented. And based on any kind of valuation measure, we've got a major correction coming soon.
Mm. Yeah, it certainly would appear that way. And I'm just waiting for more Snapchats to come. I mean, that's usually the sign, right? When you get a lot of IPO action, isn't that usually the sign of a peak also?
Well, we've had a lot. We've had a lot for the last couple of years. You know, we had the phenomenon of the unicorns in the tech sector, where there were all these private companies that hadn't gone public yet, but yet were still worth more than $1 billion based on the venture capital that was flowing into them. And that, in retrospect, might be the sign of a market top, because a lot of these companies don't even have revenues yet. They just have interesting ideas that are generating a lot of new users for whatever it is that they're selling, which sounds suspiciously like eyeballs back in 1998 and 1999, when, you know, earnings and revenues were optional and all you really needed to do was attract a lot of users to your site, you know, and some way, somehow you'd figure out a way to monetize it. And a lot of those companies didn't, and they ceased to exist. We probably have a process similar to that going on right now in tech, and it'll probably end the same way with a lot of these companies that you know, have turned out not able to monetize the visitors that they're attracting, just going bust and the venture capital sector losing all that money. Or they go public and then the people who bought the stock at the IPO lose all their money, whatever. Something like that is coming, because that's the normal cyclical nature of these kinds of markets. And again, based on any kind of historical measure, we're at the end of the process. And if we're not at the end of the process, it's because governments are distorting markets in some really, really extreme, serious way to keep this thing going. I think either one of those things is bad and scary from the standpoint of people who have a lot of money invested, because you don't want to be in uncharted territory with your life savings, even if it's going up. You know, even if you're making money this week, it's still hard to sleep, because uncharted territory by definition can have a lot of bad things out there, a lot of predators in that ecosystem that you just have never seen before because it's new. So I don't know. It would be tough to be a money manager right now, because you can't use what you were taught in business school and what you learned worked in the early part of your career, because those things don't work anymore. So crazy times, Gary. And that's just the financial valuation side of it. The political side of it is equally crazy and equally scary from the standpoint of anybody trying to rationally invest money.
So you think Trump was bugged?
Do I think Trump was what, Kerry?
Do you think Trump's headquarters there in the Trump Tower was really bugged?
Oh, well, I wouldn't put anything past the government. I have no, you know, inside knowledge of this. But since everybody else is bugged, it wouldn't be a surprise if political candidates were monitored in some way this time around.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, Trump says a lot of stuff that he heard somewhere and isn't backed up by facts. And so this might be one of those things too. I don't know.
Well, there's
and then
one,
you hear this stuff about Obama setting up a house in DC that he's filling with staffers, and he's organizing an explicit campaign to destabilize the Trump administration and take Trump down. And, you know, that's another thing that my first impression or my first impulse was to dismiss it, because it sounds flat out crazy. No president has ever done anything, or no ex-president has ever done anything like that with regards to a sitting president. But who knows in this world, you know, could well be true.
We never had a president like Barry before.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting what he would do as his second act, because he was really only in politics for a short time by the standards of political career. He was a state senator for a little while. He was a national senator for a little while. Then he ran for president, got elected, was there for 8 years, and that's it. You know, you total it all up, and it's like 11 or 12 years. which is a fraction of the political career of most people in Washington, at least on the Democrat side.
Absolutely.
So you got to assume he's still a young, active guy. He's going to do some interesting stuff going forward. But this would be a pretty big deal if he was actively working against a sitting president.
Yes, it would. So the other thing is that the head of the NSA, Admiral Mike Rogers, he went to visit Trump unbeknownst to his superiors. I think it was a week after the election, November 15th or 17th. He visited Trump Tower, unknown to the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency there, Clapper, unbeknownst to Brennan, head of the CIA, I believe, are both his superiors. He just went there unannounced. And then it got leaked in the Washington Post and the Times that they had wanted to fire him. All right. So one must ask, why did Admiral Rogers go visit the president-elect? You know, it gets interesting. You have to think, why did he go? Why would the head of the NSA go? It's not like there were a lot of people going, but why would he go? And the obvious answer is that he was there to tip off the president. And that Trump actually knew about this a long time before and was waiting to play the card. My guess. It's like kind of
I miss the days when government just made laws and just sent them out of the world. You know, this personal stuff is deeply disturbing because these guys, they should be putting their energy into into things that have some productive end somewhere out there. You know, you could make the case that while a government is gridlocked with a bunch of political infighting and personal stuff, not doing any damage, right?
Right.
So, like that old saying that the government, you know, when you're asleep is the one time you can't do any damage. Well, you know, maybe when governments are descending into gridlock and chaos, that's the one time they can't cause any real trouble out in the world. So maybe this is a good thing. I don't know. It's at least a distraction and probably a sign of, you know, the underlying problems that we have in a financial system that's so over leveraged that there are no policy solutions for our problems anymore. You know, we have this gigantic crisis out there that's going to happen one way or another.
Yeah.
And the idea that there's some kind of a policy fix at this point, you know, it doesn't matter what the marginal tax rate is. It doesn't matter what the Fed funds rate is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the corporate tax rate is. If you've borrowed so much more money than you can ever hope to pay off, and that debt is now coming due. You know, that that's your overriding problem. And there's no fix for that that involves some kind of government policy that puts us back on a simple path. There's nothing like that out there. So we have to go through the debt crisis in some way.
We've been going through it, arguably,
and
right?
Then, well, yeah, historians will look back and say that the debt crisis started to bite in 2000. And then ever since, we've been doing more and more extreme things to try to stave off this inevitable reckoning. And that all what we've done since then has succeeded in doing is make the problem bigger and scarier and more serious when it does hit. You know, we doubled the national debt, the government's debt under George W. Bush. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doubling the debt, in other words, borrowing more in 1 8-year period than all the presidents combined borrowed up until that point, from George Washington all the way up through Bill Clinton, was a pretty amazing thing to have happen. And then Obama comes along and does it again. You know, he doubles the national debt.
So will Trump do it? Will Trump double it again? Or can he? Can it be done?
Trump's program calls for massively increased government spending on a lot of things and tax cuts. So, yeah, if that's enacted, we'll see big deficits and possibly another doubling of the national debt. But I can't believe we could get to that point, you know, to go from $20 trillion of government debt. And remember, government debt is just the tip of an iceberg. You know, corporate debt is at record levels. Sure. Consumer debt is at record levels. Student loans, auto loans, mortgages, all of that stuff, credit cards. It's all soaring right now, as is unfunded liabilities. So if you add it all all up, the numbers are just, you know, inconceivable. The average family owes $1 million and some dollars right now.
When I hear things and like that, John, I just want to go out and go out on disability.
You'd be in good company then, since disability payments are soaring right now too, right?
I know. It's just another liability that the government can't pay, right?
Yeah, yeah. And see, these things are all beginning to come due right now because, for instance, the unfunded liabilities of Medicare and Social Security become real when baby boomers retire.
Yeah.
And the oldest boomer is 70 years old now.
That's us.
So it's
That's
happening.
You and me.
It is happening.
We have a little vested interest here.
Yeah. Well, Kerry, you and I are, we're going to see payments from Social Security and Medicare, but they are going to decline in real terms at an accelerating rate.
Mm-hmm.
So what we get will go up because it'll be adjusted for quote unquote inflation, but the real cost of living is going to soar relative to the payments that we get. So we're going to get squeezed year after year after year. And then our kids are never going to see an actual penny from any of this. You know, it's going to fall apart long before that. But this is the beginning of the process because the requirements that the government now faces are going to start to spike as boomers start to retire. And then fake numbers, you know, the stuff that's off the balance sheet, like the unfunded liabilities of Medicare and Medicaid or of the Chicago or the Illinois pension plan, stuff like that, they become real obligations because you actually have to generate cash to pay them. And so if we get to that point, the system will blow up. But I think the system could blow up for various other reasons long before that. And, you know, there's no way to know which one it'll be because you've got so many catalysts out there, as you and I have talked about 100 times. You know, we've gone through the catalyst list a bunch of times.
A lot of black swans.
Yes. And they're all out there and they're all getting worse. Nothing is getting better right now. That's the thing. And it's masked by these, you know, new stock market records and industrial production going up a bit and home sales rising a bit. You know, these are all numbers that don't mean anything. Whereas the real number, which is the amount of money that we owe, keeps going up year after year after year. You know, and in the next recession, all of those meaningless numbers like employment and factory output, stuff like that, they'll turn back down. Meanwhile, the debt will keep rising, and that's when things really blow up. So I don't know, Kerry. It does definitely feels like it's coming, but it also definitely feels like the government has a few more tricks up its sleeve. You know, we can start buying equities pretty soon and we can increase the amount of money that's being created. As long as dollars and euros and yen are still in demand around the world, governments can play these games. But at some point, we will have traded a financial crisis for a currency crisis. And at that point, there won't be any tools left because if your currency isn't widely accepted as something that is valuable now and will hold its value in the future, then it's game over for a central bank. That's all you got, you know? It's like having a really powerful rifle and then running out of bullets. You know, that rifle then becomes a club, which is a lot less effective in any kind of a confrontation.
Speaking of which, Bitcoin is at 1284 as we speak here, John.
So, Bitcoin is another symptom of the issues that the world has, because basically people around the world are switching out of their national currencies because they don't trust them anymore and switching into Bitcoin, which is a an instantaneous means of transferring wealth from one place to another. And it also exists in limited supply. It's created via an algorithm that has limits on the creation of new Bitcoin up to a point where it stops. You know, I think it's 21 million Bitcoin, something like that. There's a fairly small number of Bitcoin that can be created under the current system. And so it exists in limited supply. Mm-hmm. And it also exists in a supply that is dwarfed by the supply of gold, which is why it's rising in relation to gold, because the gold is very rare and it's not being created or it's not being found at a rapid rate. You know, the supply of gold goes up by about 2% a year, but it still dwarfs the supply of Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin has some downsides, which is that it's electronic. You know, it's not a real thing that you can put in a bank vault or bury in your backyard.
Paper,
you know?
And
so your account can be hacked.
Yeah, right.
And governments, if they perceive Bitcoin to be a threat, can regulate it out of existence. Well, actually, they can try to regulate it out of existence. We will find out how hard that is to do. at some point, because various governments have messed with Bitcoin in the past in various ways, China being the most recent, and it didn't stop the increase in its value and its usage. So we'll see what happens when, for instance, the Fed decides that Bitcoin is a problem and tells the NSA to do something about it.
Right. Gotcha. Well, interesting. We'll have to leave it at that, John, and find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com and find us at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Any questions, comments, etc., send us an email, kl@carrielutz.com. That's kl@carrielutz.com. The Twitter feed is @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And John, we will catch up with you next week. Hopefully your internet will be back to normal.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.